16, retorted Eliza. Go sister from Montreal is coming tonight, and she's gone to the train to meet her and left orders for me to make a cake for tea. She read out the recipe and told me what to do, but I've clean forgot half the directions already. And it says, flavor according to taste. What does that mean? How can you tell? And what if my taste doesn't happen to be other people's taste? Would a tablespoon of vanilla be enough for a small layer cake? I felt sorrier than ever for the poor man. He didn't seem to be in his proper sphere at all. I had heard of henpecked husbands, and now I felt that I saw one. It was on my lips to say, Mr. Blair, if you'll give us a subscription for the hall, I'll mix up your cake for you. But I suddenly thought it wouldn't be neighborly to drive too sharp a bargain with a fellow creature in distress. So I offered to mix the cake for him without any conditions at all. He just jumped at my offer. He said he'd been used to making his own bread before he was married, but he feared cake was beyond him. And yet, he hated to disappoint his wife. He got me another apron, and Diana beat the eggs, and I mixed the cake. Mr. Blair ran about and got us the materials. He had forgotten all about his apron, and when he ran, it streamed out behind him, and Diana said she thought she would die to see it. He said he could bake the cake all right. He was used to that. And then, when he asked for our list, and he put down $4. So you see, we were rewarded. But even if he hadn't given a cent, I'd always feel that we had done a truly Christian act in helping him. Theodore White's was the next stopping place. Neither Anne nor Diana had ever been there before, and they had only a very slight acquaintance with Mrs. Theodore, who was not given to hospitality. Should they go to the back or front door? While they held a whispered conversation, Mrs. Theodore appeared at the front door with an armful of newspapers. Deliberately, she laid them down one by one on the porch floor and the porch steps, and then down the path to the very feet of her mystified callers. "Will you please wipe your feet carefully on the grass and then walk on these papers?" she said anxiously. "I've just swept the house all over, and I can't have any more dust dragged in. The path's been real muddy since the rain yesterday." "Don't you dare laugh," warned Anne in a whisper, as they marched along the newspapers. "And I implore you, Diana, not to look at me, no matter what she says, or I shall not be able to keep a sober face." The papers extended across the hall and into a prim, blackless parlor. Anne and Diana sat down gingerly on the nearest chairs and explained their errand. Mrs. White heard them politely, interrupting only twice, once to chase out an adventurous fly, and once to pick up a tiny wisp of grass that had fallen on the carpet from Anne's dress. Anne felt wretchedly guilty, but Mrs. White subscribed $2 and paid the money down, to prevent us from having to go back for it. Diana said when they got away, Mrs. White had the newspapers gathered up before they had their horse untied, and as they drove out of the yard, they saw her busily wielding a broom in the hall. "I've always heard that Mrs. Theodore White was the neatest woman alive, and I'll believe it after this," said Diana, giving way to her suppressed laughter as soon as it was safe. "I'm glad she has no children," said Anne solemnly. "It would be dreadful beyond words for them if she had." At the Spencers, Mrs. Isabella Spencer made them miserable by saying something ill-natured about everyone in Avonlea. Mr. Thomas Boulder refused to give anything because the hall, when it had been built 20 years before, hadn't been built on the site he recommended. Mrs. Esther Bell, who was the picture of health, took half an hour to detail all her aches and pains, and sadly put down 50 cents because she wouldn't be there that time next year to do it. No, she would be in her grave. The worst reception, however, was at Simon Fletcher's. They saw two faces peering at them through the porch window, but although they rapped and waited patiently and persistently, nobody came to the door. Two decidedly ruffled and indignant girls drove away from Simon Fletcher's. Even Anne admitted that she was beginning to feel discouraged, but the tide turned after that. Several Sloane Just